Thursday, December 18th, 2025, and it's 12:10 p.m., and I will call to order the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board of Commissioners regular board meeting, as well as the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Board of Directors regular board meeting. And we're officially called to ask Mr. Gerber to call the roll.
Commissioner Carrington? Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Yes.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Yes.
Chairman Ritchie?
Present. With that, we have a quorum, and we're officially called to order at 12:11 p.m. on Thursday, December 18th, 2025. Next item on business, I have Commissioner Apostolo, which will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Next item is public communications. Did we have anyone sign up? We did not. The next is the citywide advisory report. So I ask Lucy to come forth and make her presentation.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Good morning, everybody. Ooh, that sounds good. Citywide board meetings for December 9th, 2025, 10:30 a.m. Meeting was called to order by myself, Garcia, Citywide Board President. Call the meeting at 10:33. Veronica Castillo Perez, Citywide Vice President, get the minutes on last Citywide Board meeting. Veronica also provided the treasury report for Citywide balance with $2,400. My presentation was Michael Ross, Vice President of TAMI. As a reminder for the holidays, please do not overload outlets. This is a fire hazard. Keep your heat at 65 degrees. Make Rent Cafe your New Year's resolution to pay your rent and submit work orders online. Michael Gerber, CEO, we're very excited to announce the agency's name change back to Austin Housing Authority. We are working on a new logo, and we are very excited to share this new first look with our residents. We're happy to hear that IMOUNT had a wonderful time at the Ballet Austin's Met Circus. Maria Pozzolo, Resident Commissioner, share words of encouragement to Santa Rita's family, and we understand that moving is hard, but in the end, the redevelopment and brand new Santa Rita will be very well worth it. Austin Pathways with Liliana Diego, Senior Director of Community Development. As a reminder, Resident Council budget must be extended by December 31st, 2025. Excess funds do not roll over to the next year. Citywide Board President Lupe Garcia suggested a resident council training for all resident council officers to educate them on Robert's Rules of Order. Use the remaining Citywide Board funds to purchase items for upcoming holidays and community events. Office supplies and to replenish emergency food pantry taco will be close December 24th, 25th, and 26th. Donna McGreen, Youth Education and FSS Manager, who received a donation of 300 coats from Coats for Kids, will be distributing them next week across all PDRA properties. Brown Santa will deliver gifts to Booker T. Washington, and we're also working with Operation Christmas Gift with Junior League of Austin. Operation Brown Santa will be distributing gifts at Booker T. Washington. Donna Spinoza, Workforce Development and Digital Inclusion Manager. Goodwill office hours are from 7. Let me put the ending of the... Or at the 7 CDL property for career management services. Barama Lee, Ring and Home Health Manager, cancer education classes are available at North Loop, Shadow Bend, Georgian Manor, and Northgate. Daniel Reese, thank you to everyone who participated in the HACA Building Day. Over 40 HACA staff assistance habitats for the humanity to build the 12 homes at Rosewood Prospect Heights. Meeting adjourned. Jesse Austin, Vice President of Gaston, made a motion to adjourn the meeting. Margie Perez, President of Bolden, second the motion. Meeting adjourned at 11:35. Thank you.
Thank you. I might want to highlight to you that the HACA staff did spend time building, donating volunteer hours, helping build those habitat homes at Rosie Court, which is really exciting and very special.
It was very cold, I heard.
Yep. So, Luther, I know you're going to stay there for just another moment, but I might ask Ann Gass if she could come forward and maybe report out to the board about the progress on the move from Santa Rita to Rosewood Court and to other sites and how that transition is going. And Luther, I know you'll offer some thoughts as well.
Good afternoon, Commissioner, staff, and guests. Ann Gass, Director of Strategic Housing Initiative. Provide a little update on Santa Rita. So, you all may remember that we've had 97 families at Santa Rita to start with. We have moved 44 families from Santa Rita. I'll tell you a little bit about where they're going. You may remember that with our past relocations, we had vouchers. We had housing choice vouchers, so we had some more options for where to move folks. We don't have vouchers this year. We had to be a little creative. So we have... we moved quite a few of the families into TAMI properties, so the HACA CBRA properties that we own and manage. And the benefit of that is same subsidies, and they just move right in. But that we weren't able to accommodate everyone at TAMI properties. So of the 53 that we have left to move, 13 are going to additional TAMI properties that will become vacant in the next month or so. 22 are occupying the first building at Rosewood, which is really exciting. Mr. Gerber mentioned that we got the temporary certificate of occupancy 2 days ago, so they'll be moving on Saturday and Sunday. That will be a very busy day at Rosewood. One family is going to Chalmers. One family is going, I'm sorry, six families are going to Bidder's Place, another property that we redeveloped down off of South Lamar, and 11 are going to AMC-managed AOHC properties. And so the last few that I mentioned don't have subsidies attached to the units that we are releasing the families to. So HUD has a program called the Pass-Through, where it allows us to continue to request the subsidies to Santa Rita families and pass it, and it gets passed through to the other location. So HUD's given us preliminary approval to do that, so we're starting those moves also on Saturday. So it's been great working with Ron and Suzanne and the folks at AMP to get those families moved. But it's been a really heavy lift for all of us. Tiffany Middleton and our consultants from CBR have been working really hard to make sure all the families are taken care of. And it's been really hard for the families. With all that we've been doing, it's been really hard for families. As we all know, moving is hard under the best of circumstances, and when it's not, you're not choosing to move, it's not necessarily the best of circumstances. So we're doing everything we can to make it as seamless as possible, understanding that there's going to be a certain amount of, particularly in the holidays, we have these last few folks getting ready to move. So we have a 3-day move hiatus around Christmas and a 2-day move hiatus around New Year's. But other than that, we're going to be getting people moved. And I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone has. Well, we have moving crews who are helping all of them move. It might be something to consider, a little extra special something for these families that are moving at Christmas. I think that's a great idea. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I'll let someone else answer that question. but that's okay. I can't answer with the depth that Laura can answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the realities of being in shortfall, but grab a mic.
Hello, everybody. Laura Boda, Vice President of Assisted Housing. So we've talked about this for some many months now that we are in a shortfall status. So we have a number of restrictions in place, HUD required restrictions, and one of those is we're not able to issue additional vouchers off of the main waiting list that Anne referred to. Yeah,
of course. That would have been the preferred method, for sure. There's just a lot more options for where we can send people. And it gives the residents a lot more choice. That's the biggest thing. They can use a voucher at so many places throughout the city. And with all the different programs that we have to work with, it's not able to offer as many options.
Okay, I know this has been a really tough process. You're one of the residents moving to Rosewood Court.
Yes.
Can you share what your experience is doing and maybe some of your fellow San Jose residents are going through?
I think the most of the feelings is the waiting. Waiting for an answer, you know, to where we were going and when. Some of the families, especially the ones with children, were wondering, always wondering if today or should not they put a Christmas tree up? Today or not put the lights up? And what I said to some of them was like, go ahead and put the tree up. Because at the end of the day, for you both, it's going to still be Christmas. And they felt a little bit more happier when I said, there's no reason not to put the lights on. There's no reason to put your tree up. So I put a tree in the community room, and it's been there for a whole month. And that's been a joy for the kids to come in and look at the tree and the lights. We will have Santa for them tomorrow. And the constables will bring gifts for the rest of the family that's there. And then we'll deliver it to the rest of the other families, to other to property segments. For me, it's hard. For me, it's, and I'm just going to say it like this. I'm really short. September 15, 2015, I moved to Santa Rita. I sat on my porch and I loved the way it looked with all the trees. When I saw somebody coming and marching trees, the first thing I asked is, you're not going to cut that tree down, are you? Because they're so beautiful, right? So in the years have come, I've learned a lot. I've shared a lot. I saw a lot of families come and go. I saw the children grow up. I saw them, see them graduate. Just yesterday, I got a text from one of my little young ones. Not young anymore, because now she's going to be an RN. An RN, and she texted me yesterday. They moved out because they had a better income. And I could not believe that she had gotten that older. And to become, they call me Grandma. Grandma, I just want to let you know that I will become that RN. And that was like a touching to me, because it shows what a lot of things that are good in Santa Rita and any other property. But for me, it's like I'm moving away, but I'm not going empty-handed. I'm going with a heart full of good memories. And wherever I go, when I sit at that window, I want to know that out there too, in this property where I'm going to, there'll be good memories also when we leave again. So to me, it's been a pleasure to serve and a pleasure to be in Santa Rita. It is my home. But sir, I want to say thank you. Because a lot of families, when I got there, really didn't know what a resident council was. They didn't know that we could have a good time. They didn't know that there was something out there better for them. And I didn't do this by myself. I did it with a team. Papa team, an advisory board team, and the resident council. so I take that with me and move on. And I'll be sitting in my new home Saturday. And I'll put my tree back up.
And I thank you for all that you've done to create and foster our home. This is an absolutely extraordinary event, and I know that will continue under your leadership, whether you're directly involved or not. I see you as our mom. Mm-hmm. Thank you again.
You're very welcome. Very welcome.
Period for Santa Rita, and then when will our residents be able to start moving back in?
The West stays by December of 2027, and the East stays by summer, fall of 2023. So 6 months, 6 to 9 months later. Sounds like a long time from now, but it'll be a very long
time. But of course, there's been a big push to get residents moved from the site by the end of 2025. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to move away as we start getting closer to the tax credit. Mm-hmm. And so Carl's been asked to get his hand. So we will see in the first week of January people out there starting with asbestos removal, lead removal. It's all been contained and some safe because they live there, but now that we're going to disturb it, there's some remediation that has to take place. Mm-hmm. And then I think the first buildings will probably start to come down probably in March, maybe early April.
Yeah.
It'll take some time. And on the day we look to the buildings coming down, Luce, I'd like to invite you and anyone else who'd like to come. That was really special for me and Sylvia and others when Rosewood came in. We had some folks there. You know, it's a special place, and it deserves it's a hard moment, and we should, it'd be nice to be there. So I'd really like to come out when we know it's back a little closer.
Do we know how many of, and obviously this contains over the next 3 years, but how many of our current residents are planning on coming?
We don't collect that data at this point. As soon as we're everyone settled, we start to have these discussions, and particularly in open our resident section, private manager, we'll have quarterly meetings with the families. We don't start collecting that data at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We hope a lot. We hope a lot.
Lucy, are you coming back?
There's a corner stone right there.
You pick your unit.
Her current unit is staying. It's one of the preservation buildings, so it'll still be there when she comes back.
Totally redone.
So let me ask you, just like the others who have in other properties we redeveloped, where the residents have moved to a location. In this case, the relocation has been somewhat different because of the lack of vouchers. Mm-hmm. But like where they've gone to some of our family properties, once Santa Rita is developed, are they required to move back or can they remain there? So I know, like for instance, I asked about Rosewood, and I was told only about 20% of the folks who have lived there are actually planning on moving back.
Right.
Because they are settled, they like where they are, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, in many cases, those individuals or families have vouchers or other. Mm-hmm. So I'm just asking.
That's a great question, and the answer is a combination. So, first of all, every resident who is within Santa Rita in good standing before they move will have first right to respect. So everyone can come back.
What's that number?
It's just shy of 97. Michael, do you remember how many units we have vacant? Seven. So 90. So 90 is our baseline. So all 90 families will have the first right to return, you know, if they want to. Whether they have to come back depends on how we relocated them. So if they went to a pasture, I talked about the pasture, we passed the subsidy through. If they went to a pasture unit, because HUD has to approve it, it's a special process, they will have to come back if they are in pass-through when they come back to Santa Rita. Now, some of the families that are going to pass-through will actually end up being offered a Crossroads Rosewood unit when the other Rosewood units come online, or a PAMI unit as PAMI units become available. When a resident is settled in a subsidized unit, so whether it be at Rosewood or it be at PAMI, they have the option to stay. It's only if they're on that pass-through subsidy that they will have to come back. So, can I explain that? Well, I know it's... Okay. Yes.
How many are on the pass-through subsidy?
As of this, the end of this year, it will be 17. 17. Yep. And, I mean, honestly, I would expect that most, if not all, of those 17 will end up getting a unit offer at a PAMI property or at Rosewood. The challenge with those 17 families is that they are large bedroom sites. So we're talking about 3 and 4 bedroom units. And 3 and 4 bedroom units are harder to come by. They're harder to come by in Austin generally. They're harder to come by in the PAMI portfolio. So we're having to wait for 3 and 4 bedrooms to be vacated, plus be able to move these families into them.
So the families, so are the 90, I'll also tell the 90 that's being relocated in one of these different times under one of these different programs. Do they have choice about which program they're being relocated under, or?
It's a good question. So, what we did is we have a multi-page questionnaire where we ask the families all the things that will go into where they might want to go. You know, what part of town, is there a school, do they have kids, a doctor, what have you, what their considerations are for where they want to go. And then we just try to create as many options as possible to allow for them to be where they want it. So we had a woman who got an offer at Meadowbrook down here south. She works up north. And so we had to talk to Brittley, our admissions director, and say, hey, can we get her within the rules? Can we get to the Thurman? And lo and behold, she was next up on the Thurman list. So we passed on that Meadowbrook list. She's on the Thurman list. That was her first choice. So whenever we can, we're trying to get people in their first choice. It's not always possible. Yeah.
I am Francis Helper. I need to ask. Okay. There is a motion I would like to introduce, and I hope that my fellow commissioners will support it. The motion is to have $10,000 go to IMOM to be used to assist residents at Santa Rita who have identified needs and to help with the costs associated with moving during
the holidays.
Okay. Well, Sam, help me. We missed that one. Okay. So let me just read the last part about this. We want $10,000 to go to IMOM, right? And that money is going to be used to assist residents who have identified needs and to help with the costs associated with this moving during the holidays. And as a second part to that, in terms of implementation, Leilani and Austin Packers will assist with the distribution of these funds to ensure full compliance with proper rules and accounting procedures. Okay, where is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion made in second.
Now,
when you use the term identified me,
I'm trying to answer.
Well, I might interject here that I think different residents have shared different needs with CVR and with our staff. Tiffany is out isn't here today because a lot of people are working at the property, working with residents, and we're seeing some gaps, and they can range from a lot of there's a lot of different things, and they're specific to the person. And frankly, one of the things that has been so beautiful about iMom is that they really are out there and know all of those folks, and they know those needs. The other thing is that they know some of the folks who maybe wouldn't bring their needs forward, because some of the stuff is hard. It's hard, and so they'll know some gaps that we may not know about. But then we'll have our team also able to serve the trip. So it brings together, hopefully, everybody to make sure that we identify those things that are real. We only fund the things that are real and appropriate to fund. That's why we'll have Leilani and Austin Pathways to sort of backstop the effort. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Does that answer the...
Is there a maximum per household, or have we gotten that far yet?
We haven't, but I think we would... how many families are we talking about in total?
Yep. It was 90 families, but the ones that are moving in the next 18 days is 53.
53. Mm-hmm. So imagine, we'll want to spread that so that it doesn't have an impact for that. So should we say no more than $500 to any one family? And we can do that through our rules.
I have a list of some of the families there that were going to need some assistance. So I was trying to get a hold of some sponsors to see if they could help. And this would definitely help me generate with Leilani all their needs, if that's okay.
Yeah, mapping is great. But
can we allow some flexibility with the $10,000 care? In other words, it comes up as $10,500, and there's a flexibility baby food for you guys as well.
Sure, I think I'll interpret the rule that this motion if it passes, if your intent is to be flexible with it, and we'll work through that. So let's start with that.
Okay.
And let's really get because we know what's kind of out there, and we should make it again. It's very good.
That was very nice. Thank you so much.
To your point on flexibility, I mean, like you're saying, you end up having to go over a couple $1,000. Mike could always come back to this board meeting and we can ratify that. We're going to approve that. So,
And before if I see the need, once I I will definitely send Leilani all the information and what is it exactly what they need, and if it's really something that can be done, and not just because they need a pair of brand new shoes or anything like that, I wouldn't do that. But if the children needed it, or if they needed clothes or something that then I would let them on.
Okay. And one of the great things about our procurement policy and rules that you are giving us with that some time today, that could be
okay.
So it's a very generous presentation and we promote them and we will
we're excited. She's excited. I'm more excited.
It'll make a difference.
Me and Leilani, we love to work together. Okay, thank you so much, y'all. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Thanks. That's all you're doing today, really. So great to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioners, this is one of my favorite meetings because we get to announce our employee of the quarter, and I am so excited to announce this one because there are lots of people around in Haka land, if you will, that bring joy and are you love seeing those folks each day, and who makes a difference and light up the place. One of those people sits not too far from me, and I get to see her on a regular basis, and she is always just a bright light. Amy Duhon has. Come on up, Amy. We get somebody to ask you. Come on. Amy Duhon, extraordinary member of the team in Pathways Asset Management. She sits right outside Michael Roth's office, but she really sits up next to Michael Roth, Michael Gerber, Sylvia Blanco, you know, and so many other folks who just depend on her. And when things are miserable, you know, and you're having a hard day, I go walking around the building, yeah, and I'll just taste, and when I taste, I see Amy. And she always smiles, says hi, and I'm like, hi, and it's hard to be as irked as I was. Amy hails from Belmont. Yep, and Amy is a source of incredible professionalism, getting this stuff done. She's there. You work late hours, you work long hours. You do an awful lot of stuff, and we love you.
Thank you so much.
So here's I don't know where you're going to take it, but there's a day off in here somewhere. Look at that beautiful logo in the background. 331. Congratulations, Amy.
Hey, Michael. Hello. So Michael works closely with me day in and day out. He's a pro pirate.
Amy started 5 years ago, so it was during the middle of the pandemic when we hired her. So it was the very first person I ever went through that process of hiring someone and doing full training virtually during the pandemic. And this is my thing before. Just a joy to work with Amy. Extremely conscientious. She cares about her work. She cares about doing things right. And she cares about her residents. And she cares about her coworkers. And she shows that every day. And so I genuinely appreciate and really thrilled that the staff saw that in you and awarded you this award.
So the meeting of the Amy Fan Club is going to end now, and we're going to bring this on back to the board meeting. Item number one on the consent agenda is approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on November 13, 2025. Appasola moves. Carrington seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And motion's approved. Item number two is a presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding Resolution 2927. Approving the property budgets for calendar year 2026 for Pathways at Goodrich Place and Pathways at Chalmers Court South, East, and West. Ann Gass is going to come back up along with Ashley from Carlton, and glad to see you. You would introduce yourself to the board, and then we'll spend a few minutes walking through this item.
I'm Ashley Sulai, VP of Operations at Carlton Living. Again, Ann Gass, Director of Strategic Housing Initiatives.
So you know, Carlton Development, Carlton Companies has been our developer partner for Chalmers and Rosewood and Santa Rita. And so Carlton Living, their property management arm, has been managing Chalmers since the beginning. They will be managing, actually they are, I guess as of today, managing Rosewood officially as we open it up. And they took over management of Goodrich 3 years ago. So they've got all of our RAD redeveloped properties under their management right now. And so Ashley's going to walk you through a little bit of the budget for the three. You all have the budget in front of you. So we'll kind of give a general overview. And if you have any questions about what was in your packet or anything else, we'll take questions.
Well, I got one question for you before you start. Did you move back from Dallas to take the job, or were you already here and just got hired?
No, I've been with Carlton Living for 2 years now, but I'm based in Dallas. So we'll start with the three Chalmers. We are projecting that they stabilize at average of 96% occupancy. That's in line with 2025. Our total income, we are projecting a 4.5% increase. And that's attributed to our annual average 3% GHCA increase, along with an average of almost 2% HUD increase annually. In regards to total expenses, on the three, we are averaging just a right under 7% increase. What those expenses include are slight increase in payroll. We have anticipating to have additional team members join for health benefits, as well as we've done some KPI quarterly performance bonuses to our managers and service managers for 2026, and really just to stay competitive within the market. And then we've added an additional bonus for our maintenance team members that are on call during the week that respond to emergency calls after hours. The next is we've got in G&A across the board, we are implementing centralized billing. So that would be an increase across all four of the properties. And we've also added additional funds for increased training and compliance, leasing and customer service. We are also planning to move to online leasing and renewal. Currently, our prospects are not able to apply online and make it a seamless process, so we are implementing that in future. Currently, they're filling out their paper application, all of the forms that are required for compliance, and they'll be able to do that all electronically. Sign their lease electronically.
Similar to what the Pathways portfolio is doing with Rent Cafe, we've been implementing Rent Cafe at our properties to allow people to do more processes online after they've talked about implementation.
And it's really just understanding. It's helpful for on both sides, really. There's that everything's really documented well, that there's consistency, and you can really track the relationship, and which is really helpful for accountability on both sides.
Let me ask you another question. So I see the bad debt is at 5.91. So we got high, low. You need to put in context for me.
So the average bad debt for Chalmers in general is more around the 2-3%. Yeah, in some instances it is less than 1% at Chalmers East. 3.5%.
So you get 5.9.
I think what you're looking at is the variance from year to year. Is that what you're seeing, the 5.91? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the variance from what we are. We're projecting the 5.9% increase, I guess, in bad debt is what they're asking about.
It's very minimal, and that is attributed to it's right at 1.5% of CPR cost portfolio, But that's just in terms of the rental increases.
Okay.
Commerce East and Commerce West. So our total non-operating expenses, we are doing less capital and projecting less capital in 2026. Overall, that's going to be the same. Yeah. I don't have the specifics of who in my for all that fell into our capital for 2025 for West, but we are just projecting, we're coming, talking about recycling, it's still fairly new building, so we're in a good place.
Yeah, and I could get into details. I don't have off the top of my head what we did this year as far as capital expenses to these two, but what we budget for and what actually happens sometimes changes, right? And so we're budgeting for less, expecting less along these lines, and mostly there's tree trimming and parking lot reset. But I'd be happy to get the details of what makes up the 27 and the... Yeah, no, I can actually probably pop upstairs and get that for you. Okay.
Yeah. I $100,000, I think that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me ask you, are you rough enough the refreshment of the mulch? Mm-hmm. Well, I'd have to have the part of it.
Yeah.
And I will say, at Rosewood, we are significantly reducing the mulch. Mm-hmm. So we're significantly reducing that expense. So we're learning from our staff.
The next category of you'll see an increase is in our advertising and marketing. And just a few months ago, we brought on a VP of marketing that came in and did an assessment of all of our properties and our advertising dollars. And we have realigned basically our agenda to make sure that we're maximizing the leads that are coming in. We're doing the qualified traffic. And so we have put in additional funds for our PPC campaign, mm-hmm. beginning on the time of the year of the PPC. Google ad campaign.
Oh.
So it's keywords behind the scenes that are particular to the property and so the demographics or the areas that we're trying to pull these in from. So
how do you get that word out if you're targeting special populations, special areas? How does that work?
It is keywords, and that is outside of
I know
my realm.
You can put analytics on your website,
mm-hmm.
and get a report for where people click, where they stop clicking, where they click through, mm-hmm. the path that they take.
Mm-hmm.
This is just all data you can pull, and then you can customize your website, you can customize your marketing based on who's clicking and where they're clicking.
Oh, okay.
Pretty impressive.
And we did that extensively on the hot tub.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not sure about how that works.
Yeah, Jorge Vasquez, Director of Technology. Like Anne was explaining, right? We can track what the interests of the people that are visiting our website. They visit it multiple times. If they're going to a specific property, right? So, and they can tailor the special program, advertising specific to those people. So whenever they're, when you're on your phone, you're watching stories, you can, you know, sometimes you can get as specific to what you've been targeting.
The market is more of a renter's market, so we're in more competition in our PBRA properties as well as in the AAHC properties. Is it fair to say, Ron, in the AAHC properties, we're also spending more in advertising and trying to get raw traffic in? So it's a problem, you know, that because the market, there's more supply, there's less demand. The challenge, though, is that we're expecting in the next year or so that we'll see a decrease in supply and demand continue to rise. And that's when rents go up. That's when we don't have to advertise usually as much. But right now, in this market, we do have to advertise.
Thank you.
Additional, you'll see an increase for our total other property expenses. In July of this year, we rolled out an additional insurance asset for tax that it covers every unit. It's for resident cost units. So if they were to cause a fire, if they were to cause flooded units, we pay $8 per unit per month, and it covers up to $100,000 zero liability. And it's already been proven.
And none of this cost is transferred to the renter of the season.
At Goodrich this year, it paid for itself. We had a flood, and it paid for itself. So we were testing it out,
mm-hmm.
but so far it's been a good product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's resident policy in there. Make ready expenses, that's a pretty big increase. It's really due to the age of the, as they get older, those returns with at East and South, the make ready costs are increasing.
And
the general support for propane.
Mm-hmm.
On our fixed contracts across the board, we have our boiler maintenance agreement. We have implemented solar panel preventive maintenance on all of the properties for 2026. And also we're proposing to increase the security controls.
Mm-hmm. Who do you use the security?
I have so many.
I can
get the name.
But it's a private firm.
It is.
Okay. And it's a similar setup, I think, that it can use at some of our properties where we have a contract for a certain number of visits every night. They're not on site all the time. We don't need them on site all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they visit on a non-set schedule and walk the property and check the gates and all that kind of thing. I can find out. I don't know off the top of my head. I can pull it up. I've got it upstairs. So I don't have them.
Okay. I know for some of the properties, we use entire or part-time police officers. I was just wondering whether it was a private security firm or one of those.
Private.
And in the private security firms, do they carry guns?
Some do and some don't. I don't think ours are. I'm not certain of that. I don't think so, but you can get it either way. This
mm-hmm.
is just more for them.
It's amazing. It's certainly more expensive if you have a
mm-hmm.
officer.
Right. I bet you weren't expecting all these questions, were you?
Sure. Exactly. No worries. Repairs and maintenance, standard increase, you know, just for supply, maybe supplies, repairs
mm-hmm.
on the property. So that basically gets us down to our operating expenses. And then, as we stated earlier, the non-recurring capital across the properties is becoming recycling, cleaning the
corridors,
mm-hmm. purchasing a machine for the hallways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple of the recurring themes that I tend to hear about when I am going to resident council meetings, talking to residents, just being at the property.
Mm-hmm.
Security is one. So that's why we're increasing, you know, the security patrols. And part of that is making sure the gates are operational. So again, the security guards go by and they report when a gate is, because they get vandalized, unfortunately, fairly regularly. Mm-hmm. Another concern is elevators. And the elevators, again, unfortunately, are getting vandalized a good bit as well. And that's trying for everyone when the elevators don't work. So that's someone on the third floor who's not good with stairs. So that's a focus. The additional staff expense, also, it contributes two things. One, it helps with the security because they have more time to look at cameras, very time to come in to review those cameras. Mm-hmm. Having a little bit more time to look at cameras and also being improved customer service. The more people we have, the more time we can spend with the individual families, just being able to take that extra bit of time. That's what we were trying to kind of focus on. Mm-hmm. Some of this is just up and down that way in the property. Those are some of the things that were in my mind as we were putting these budgets together.
And when I talked to you the other day, that's what residents I hear, you know, want, the security, stability, and safety. And, of course, you know, cleanliness, you know, the delirium and all that, but those are the main focal points that a lot of residents will voice to me.
Yeah, and keeping the gates secure has been a real challenge. I mean, Mary, you and I have talked about that a lot. They're just vulnerable to tampering. So we've moved some cameras to make sure they have good coverage, but that's an ongoing challenge. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, Carlton takes the lead from us on that. Austin Pathways provides all the resident services. We have a contract with Austin Pathways to provide resident services at all the properties that Carlton Living manages for it. So once a year, Leilani and I put our heads together and with her team and my team and talk about what we're going to change based on what grant funding is available. Of course, you may remember that we have to adhere to TDHCA points for supportive services. We have to make sure that we're getting all the points that we need. And with Chalmers particularly, we kind of look at the three pillars. We have the health and wellness associated with the clinic, the community care clinic at East. We have the youth educational success with the Boys and Girls Club. And then we have the digital inclusion and the workforce development that generally operates out of Chalmers South. So we look at it every year and just change it depending on what else is going on.
So we have staff stationed out there. And
yeah.
Several
full-time staff.
Cut it off. The services that we're offering there, we may want to be able to take to other campuses. So I think everybody's going to be looking at what you do and what you can offer the tenants as well. And if there's anything novel coming along that you can partner with some other outside group.
Yeah, Chalmers gets a lot of attention. I do tours at Chalmers. I do a couple of quarters for different groups that want to see what we're doing there. So we do. I mean, we're proud to see it, to show it as a model for what we can do.
Right.
And I have a question. Do y'all have a resident advisory board where a resident can sit with you and Leilani while y'all are doing this, but might give you ideas that maybe they've gotten from residents what they want on their property?
You don't, Mary.
Because I remember when I was in the resident advisory board where we were going to be moving, it was Lupe and I, and we offered a lot of input.
Yep. Are you talking about what we did when we were redeveloping Chalmers?
Yeah, but
that was really effective.
Yes, but
yeah.
I'm talking about, you know, in yours,
yep.
You know, having a resident or two from two different properties, totally different, and offering, you know, they can ask easier residents what they want than if you went, you know, they might be shy or might not. But with another resident, they may open up and say, well, you know, we'd like a clinic here too, or why come we can't have this over here that Chalmers has it, and bring it to you all. And that would be the position that the resident advisory board member would have, helping y'all establish, you know, by reaching out to residents that y'all can't, let's say.
I love that idea. Can I talk to you more about it? Maybe, and oh, we'll probably pull Leilanian, because it would definitely be for
and
well,
especially those who don't speak English, because a lot of times they have the ideas, they have, you know, what they'd like to see, but it falls on deaf ears, or they're just, you know, too shy to say, to bring it up.
Yep. Yep.
One final question in that direction. Child care services. Do we see the need for any of that? Because and we obviously have people involved in self-esteem programs, etc. But even those who are looking for work or want to go back and use their skills in education, ACC or something like that, are we meeting that need if it's necessary?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean it's one of those things. I mean, we can provide the housing, but we're limited in the range. So we'll never be able to provide enough. But there are some signs of hope. One is that at Chalmers, you know, we'll have mainstream schools when that comes in 3 years from now at Santa Rita,
yeah.
And that will be, you know, another mainstream campus.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our kids at Chalmers can certainly apply and we'll get preference there after the Santa Rita kids do. The other sign of hope is that Boys and Girls Club has been a really, it's been a joyful expansion. And I can share with you that we've been actively talking to Boys and Girls Clubs. There's some funding through Travis County that they're looking to tap into.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if we'll be able to access it together, but if we can, we're hoping that maybe we'll be able to open up maybe even an additional club at one of our sites. So it's the drips and drabs that we, you know, we love to have a big systemic betterment, but we are seeing between Mainspring and Boys and Girls Club. We're also going to, I should tell you, with communities and schools, we're celebrating the 25th year of Smart Kids, and this coming next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to do an event there. Hopefully, in raising some additional dollars, we might be able to take on some additional capacity within CIS,
mm-hmm.
And that would be a great thing too. So there's things happening, but it's not the big. It's not preschool at every site. It's not preschool at every site, if you'd like to.
Yes, I would. Should I live for that? But anyhow, I'm glad that we're still keeping our eye on that, because I think it's one of the greatest things, well, not just for our kids, but across the nation.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if there are really any serious models that we can look at to get some new direction, but I just really feel absolutely essential.
Absolutely. We're excited about what the Travis County funds might mean for Boys and Girls Club and maybe partnering with us. I would tell the board, I'm just doing a quick time check, because we've got a lot of ground to cover. It's about 1:06. I know we'll lose some of you potentially at 2:00, so just, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think we've covered the broad stuff we want to cover, address your questions. If you have any more, we're happy to answer them, but otherwise we'll stop talking. And
but we always like reports like this. This is good. This is, gets us going and makes us think about how far we've come, you know, that we're making these kind of decisions and being able to budget for these kinds of things.
So let me just ask, as Commissioner Buckenhall, what the position is. So, at our properties, you know, because as you were talking, I was thinking about, well, shouldn't we approach maybe like United Way or Ford Foundation, some of these other big philanthropic organizations, mm-hmm. about services that we could provide. And then as I was thinking through, I was like, you know what? Education in Texas is getting ready to get changed.
Totally.
Because then we got about.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was never a big proponent of it, but I'm thinking now that it's here, you know, what if we saw something out loud about having one of our properties, because we've got space, to have somebody come in,
yeah.
And, you know, to provide the education, you got the vouchers that can help pay for it, and my thought is, we provide two things, the space.
Well, that has always been my dream. When I first started, when I came to ACC and our office at ECU campus,
and I was always bringing together these nonprofits to see what services they could provide, because what was happening is that many of them were duplicating services for the same small group of people. And what I had envisioned even at that point is that the fatigue would have a unit devoted to psychiatry, and that every single property would have the same thing. And that you know that way, at least they're not having to travel, which is part of the problem, having to travel someplace to have their children taken care of. They had the place on the property. And that we could find partners and grantors who would provide funds to help them out.
Yeah, because to me there's two things. One, in terms of the child care, but also the other part I'm just thinking about was sort of the whole education, because charter schools are basically private education, and they can go wherever they want. The whole reason why they wanted to go to vouchers was because they can't afford the capital structure.
Right.
I mean, they don't, you know, they have to pay for a building, and like a public school, they just finance through bonds, and so they always felt like they were a competitive disadvantage. And I thought, like, since they're getting funded, and the funding is coming directly to those kids, if we can provide a space, we got the kids who get the funding, is there some, whether it's idea or whatever, charter school that we can have on campus, you know, and we just provide space so you get that, you know, on-site education. So whether, you know, Susie is in the fourth grade and she's got a kid brother there in childcare, once she finishes, they can just go together and go back to their youth.
Right.
And do their own office. And, you know, to me.
So, at least allow through the elementary school level.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't go past. You wouldn't go past the trick.
Right.
But I'm just thinking out loud, it's something we ought to give some thought to, because there's funding out there. And
well, see, I guess what I fear is that the funding with the voucher system is going to certainly assist all those parents who are already sitting in the school. Their kids to schools that they're paying for now, the state will pay for it. And that we're not going to be able to increase the number of low income students going to those schools because, number one, the amount of money that they would receive would not even halfway pay for tuition. So,
well, that's,
it's still the poor getting poor and the rich getting richer.
So, that's what I'm trying to solve is if you have a vendor who's willing to come in to your site and say, I know I got low-income kids, the amount of money they're going to be able to pay us. You know, we're not going to charge what we would charge somebody if she was to live in Westlake or Travis. But, you know, we know that because they're just like the folks who sold property to us and said, yeah, I can make a bunch of money, but you guys are in about four of a house. I want to educate. I want to be the Marva Collins.
Right.
Okay, I'm willing to go into hard-to-educate places with poor kids. I'm going to make money. I'm not looking to get rich. But, you know, part of teaching is, my end result is that kid who basically is able to graduate years later. I'm giving now, and I'm just wondering. So I'm just thinking out loud.
Yeah. Well, and I worry just what's going to happen this year. I mean, with the book of teaching, for example, Old Springs Elementary closes, which is right across the street from the school. And the students who are now attending Old Springs will be going to Blackshear Elementary. And then Blackshear is going to close, and they will go back to Old Springs. But the fact that we had the school right there, right across the street, and we know that most of the students are going to be impacted are our students. And I don't know why we didn't get involved in that discussion with all that was going on about what could we do to prevent having to bus them over to Blackshear or whatever is going to happen. But this is the kind of relationship we need to be building.
Well, so this is a bigger discussion.
Yes,
maybe we want to devote a little time to it next time. But I'll just say two things for clarity. One is that we have had discussions with the school. We have had conversations with the with leadership there. And we did, we have let support to try to preserve Black Shear, and we did talk a lot about Oak Springs. And I think I think there's a lot of concern, certainly, about what the impacts are for our students, and we're assured by AISD that, you know, they're struggling too. They're having a moment. They have for a while, and we're working through those issues with them, trying to make sure that things don't back up on our families any more than they have to. But I'd love to share more about some of that conversation, some of those conversations with you, and maybe put this topic maybe on pause for right now, and then come back and talk about maybe some things that we might be able to do to think about, you know, to use some of our properties for, if there's going to be resources out there, how do we tap in them, be this philanthropic, be this out there, and see what we can do to try to connect. But,
I said again, that was just food for thought. I'm
like, yeah, no,
things because at my age, if you don't say it, you'll forget it. So I beg to
Oh, wait. I beg to differ that I think I'm the senior member here. And I worry every day where my brain cells are going.
So with that, do we need to approve the item number two?
Resolution number 2928.
So the chair will entertain a motion to
I apologize. Resolution 2927. This is for the budget. Item number two.
Yeah.
Motion by Commissioner Apostolo.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Item number three, as Kelly and Laura come up, is resolution number 2928, approving the 2026 Public Housing Authority annual plan for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Actually, we're going to go ahead and take item number four first, which is resolution number 2929, including the Housing Choice Voucher Administrative Plan. Everything that was changed in the administrative plan was fed into the bigger annual report, so we'll come back and pick that one up. So first one we'll take on is 2129. Laura Bodai, take it away.
Hello, everybody. Commissioner Dr. Staff, yes. I'm Laura Bodai, Vice President of the Assisted Housing Department. If you remember, in the October board meeting, we presented to all of you the posting. Before we posted the admin plan, the changes were the separation of the waiting list, doing a separate waiting list for the FYI, the Foster Youth Independence Program, and FEP, the Family Unification Program. So we posted plans. We had, they were posted from October 17th, 2025 to December 1st. No comments were received. We had a public hearing on the 27th of October, and we held a presentation in that hearing on the changes. Attendees asked minimal questions, but they were active participants. And again, no comments were received. And so now I'm asking for your approval of the changes.
And these are all federally required changes that are...
Well, the separation of the waiting list is an option, actually. Yeah, there's a new HUD notice that came out giving us the option to create a separate waiting list. So previously, we had a preference applied to the main voucher waiting list, and it was just more administratively burdensome. So this just kind of makes it an easier path to get to the vouchers, the participants. To get to the voucher, but it doesn't change the program at all. The program maintains the same policies and procedures that they did previously.
It's just created a separate waiting list.
Exactly.
Yeah. I had not paid attention to that HUD memo that came out in April until I saw it. But I guess, and I had to go back to the report, the monthly report, to find out how many foster youth and dependents you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So according to the data in your monthly report, there was 127 students, is that correct?
For the LISA, right. We do have an allowed amount of 135 for the FEC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, do we anticipate an increase in numbers of FYI
or is this going to be pretty standard over the course of the year?
I mean, we try to match up the utilization 100% of what we can. So they go through the referral process with the coordinated entry. But I do want to mention here that through one of the shortfall restrictions is that we're not able to issue vouchers to awards prior to 2023. So right now we have two FGP awards. We had 50 that were awarded in 2024. We are still able to actively issue those vouchers, but the previous award, until we're taken out of shortfall, it's not taking back vouchers. People that have those vouchers are still able to, but we can't issue additional off of those. So those are on pause right now. And it's the same for the FYI. So there's a portion of the ACC, of the allotted voucher amount, that is paused until we're taken out of shortfall.
Just for us, or are there any other agencies taking a step? In other words, I know that you're working in partnership with LIFE, developing a CDC. But if we cannot, is there a need, an unmet need still out
there? I do. It's a great question.
There is a tremendous, and what with our partnership with City of Austin, because I worry about these too.
Sure.
I mean, it's like they're being victimized over and over again. First they're in foster, and then, gee, they're too old for foster, so you got to hit the streets, and me and my hitting the streets and being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's so, to me, I think it's seven.
Yeah, there's definitely need for more FYI vouchers. The good news is that this administration is committed to that program. So we expect to see if there are more special purpose vouchers allocated,
mm-hmm.
it would probably likely be in those two categories,
mm-hmm.
and we would certainly seek to apply for those funds. The bad news is that even if we get more vouchers, there won't be enough to meet the needs. We know that there are hundreds of kids and hundreds of folks that are thousands of people who are in need of more vouchers systems. And because we're in shortfall, and again, shortfall is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
What we've done is we've made commitments, including to LifeWorks, for a project using these FYI vouchers.
Mm-hmm.
And HUD looks at sort of our total of total authority, where we have either extended or made commitments for a little bit more than what we have allocated to us. And that's why we're in shortfall. So that's going to get better soon, but we're probably going to have a period of time where we're going up and down, in shortfall, out of shortfall, more restrictions are in place, less restrictions in place. And the reason we're doing that is because we have all these permanent supportive housing deals that we're funding. So the very kids you're talking about, Laura and I went for the groundbreaking of the work at Hillary, which is a project that's 100 kids, I think, are serving there. That one's called the Works, I think it's the Works 2 or 3.
Mm.
But they're already planning Works 4 and 5 and 6. I don't know where we're going to be able to provide the voucher help for them if it doesn't come from the feds, but it's evidence of the need.
But even with that property, if they move in there, they're only there for 36 months, right?
So for the FEP youth portion of FEP vouchers and the FYI, it is 36 months. There is an opportunity for 12-month extensions. It's a 5-year match on that program.
Okay. Thank you. And we assume that training, they're going to be able at the end of 5 years next to be able to get out on their own and be self-sustaining and get the start.
Okay.
And how often is that true? I mean, do you have any data to that what you're doing now is working? And that after 5 years, do you have no longer the need of this kind of assistance?
So I would respectfully ask, maybe we put that item as something to be discussed at a future, because I don't think we're put today.
I don't have that data.
Did anybody?
Yeah, we only do FYI with with lifeboats. So I think we can get Liz and others to come and maybe talk with us about the foster youth and foster youth.
And I guess another thing I would like to put on the future agenda, especially with the homeless too. I know we've done a fantastic job of increasing the number of people able to help. But I remember just, I guess, last week hearing some talk there, and they were talking about we're doing the homeless was all wrong. We should be giving money directly to the people instead of these agencies and support themselves. And that is the much cheaper way to go. And I wanted to know what this you thought about that as an option. Don't laugh. Because I may not be describing the program correctly, but if it is, and they say very effective, then I want to know what the data is on that. And it's something that you should be considering as an option for us.
You know, I'm only smiling because you hit right on the nail on the head on sort of the most controversial issue that's happening. For many years, the push has been for permanent supportive housing, building projects like the Life Project. And we're committed now to 7 of those projects. These are big PFH housing first deals, of which we're an integral partner. The city's an integral partner. The challenge now is that HUD has changing its approach. They don't want cities and communities and continuing to care to fund PFH to the same extent. Whereas before we were funding it at 80% of all the money that we got, now they want it to be 30%. And they want that 50% delta to be transitional housing. Which is a very different model. So there's a lot of frustration and lawsuits and other things. So yes, we can brief you, but you know, all that and do a presentation on that and talk to you. But for today, we feel like we've got to get there.
We have a very simple agenda item.
In total, when it's done,
I know. I want to say 871. I want to say 871. Yeah. But are we talking about the ones that are finished and the ones in the pipeline? Because there are a number. Oh. And then not all of the units in PDD are public supportive housing, so I do have it broken down in that monthly report.
So if you go to the assisted housing piece, there is a table that looks like this. And on the front of the table, it has the PDD or project-based housing project that are in process. And on the back of it, that page, you'll see completed PDD projects. So under the ones that are in process right now, of the ones that we've completed, the permanent supportive housing projects that are being utilized, 554 project-based vouchers have been deployed. For the ones that are in process, under construction, there's 509. And this cuts across a variety of different types of vouchers. It's housing choice vouchers, it's VASH. It can be mainstream, it can be foster youth to independence. And then there's the listing of the projects here. So it's the 7 that came out of this Travis County Collaborative, but there were even more projects than that that came about from other initiatives in the city. So it's a thing. But
well,
for these changes to the admin will help us too.
We really haven't talked a lot about the homeless issue in recent months. And I really think this is an important issue that something that I get questioned about, what is Housing Authority doing about this? We're partnering with X, Y, and Z, and we're doing such and such, and we have so many vouchers and blah, blah, blah. That doesn't satisfy
their curiosity, and I don't think it satisfies mine. So I would like to have further discussion about this.
Yeah, I would harken back to our fellow commissioners, Commissioner Bailey, in terms of our core mission. So they would fall below what the core mission is, and what I think our role is to provide the product, to help provide services, but that's not sort of the core part of what we're supposed to be doing in terms of addressing the specific homeless population. What we've been doing is folks who are under the traditional public housing model, which is now RAD, supportive housing, and then to help be a funder that helps fund places to live for the homeless. So it, to me, it's sort of part of the third part of what we end up doing, but it's not what, as Chuck was saying,
not the original mission.
It's not the original mission. And so what we're doing is going beyond the call of duty. And so anything we do is sort of helpful. You know, I know people like, you know, and that's just sort of the whole misconception about public housing. They think we're supposed to be here for everybody, poor, and regardless of what their site is. But remember, public housing was, I mean, we're at the, sort of at the very bottom of the housing continuum. Below us actually became the homeless population, because the public housing was created back in 1900. It really focused on folks coming back from World War I, urban blight, but there were folks who, but it didn't really sort of say, okay, we put you in the housing, but everybody else is like, let's go figure out and do it, all the other folks who may have, who are homeless because of different issues, whether it's bad decisions, bad life circumstances, bad health outcomes, and mental health issues. Again, getting back to what we're supposed to be doing. So, you know, when people, because I've had that conversation, and you say, you know, our core mission is this, and we're focused on it, but yet we're going to do something else. You're kind of like, you're supposed to teach fourth graders, but you do take the time to work with fifth graders after school. Sometimes you have a couple of sixth graders come to your house on the weekends, you know.
Yeah, and I understand what you said, but right now, it's difficult to determine what circumstances led to what homelessness versus what circumstances low-income people that be a part of this should be our mission.
Yeah, you know,
but, I cannot simply draw that basic line.
Well, that's the great thing about our agency is that, you know, and about this commission is that, you know, all of you care deeply about, you know, what poverty in America looks like, what poverty in Austin looks like specifically. Our task is housing. But we can't be unaware of what's happening in other cases. And where we can lend a hand, we try to. We're not going to be the fix-it agent, but we can be a part of helping to sort of lift that
challenge.
To but today's challenge is to get this administrative plan passed.
Hey, I make one more comment. I think because we have a number of vouchers specifically to address homeless and homelessness issues, it puts us in that discussion that maybe we would not have been in if we don't have these numbers of vouchers that say this is who these vouchers are, should be allocated to. And I would suggest that if we do decide to have a substantive conversation about this, since the city of Austin has a homeless guru, person, whatever, that they be part of that discussion.
We'd love to have David Gray's group, and we love coming and just say, he's terrific. And our friends from Echo as well. So we can, but give us a chance to, in January or February, map out what that discussion might look like.
I would appreciate that.
But today there's an opportunity to help by passing Resolution 2929.
And the chair is called for the question, right?
Yeah.
I approve.
So, a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. So, now we'll go back to item number three.
Item number three is Resolution 2928, approving the submission of the 2026 Public Housing Authority annual plan to HUD. which is the exact same things that were approved that in the admin plan, have been copied word for word and placed into this plan, and we need your approval to be able to get Carl's signature on it, the chairman's signature on it, to be able to submit it to House.
I move approval.
Second home read. After so second. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. We'll now move over to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda. Chair Kelly.
Any discussion?
Yep.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you all. The one item for your consideration today is
are we doing that this item too?
So that's what, so
there's two items. I'm sorry. Yeah. Which is item number two. And this would be Mr. Colwall, the identification, assessment, development, implementation of certain tenant protection, policy for properties in AAHC's portfolio.
And we have no written materials to go along with this.
We don't. So, Commissioner, maybe I can set the stage real quick. So we had intended to bring a resolution to you all talking about eviction prevention and tenant protection policies and fees. We are working closely with other housing finance colleagues in Travis County, particularly the city of Austin. And we believe that they will be bringing some kind of a resolution on these issues forward to council. And we want to make sure that we're in lockstep with council.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to have to bring up our policy to you all twice or get our policy, frankly, wrong. And so what Ron's going to present today, if that's okay with you all, is just sort of a general, quick overview, 5 to 7 minutes tops, with the hopes of then asking you all to just, with your indulgence, let us put a pin in it, keep working with the city, and then come back to you all. But this at least gives you a sense of what we're working towards. And if you have thoughts about it, we would welcome those over the coming weeks.
Before you start, one question. Does any of this involve the discussions that will happen in the legislature?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And
is this what is motivating us to try to put something in writing now?
There were two things. The legislature was one, but also the test report that was issued by BASTA and then done by the UT Law School pointed out some things and some recommendations that we felt were very, legitimate. And so that kind of spurred, got us thinking about some of the things that we need to be doing better. So it was twofold for the legislature and the test report section.
Okay.
But when you look at those three items, that pretty much packed what Heather Way and her group had come up with.
And don't forget, we also, as a board, sat together and
had
a discussion as well, so
we've
and taken into account as we keep developing and working through this. So the involvement in our partners, too, is another complex thing. They've all been very supportive, thankfully, and are being very cooperative in working towards some of these things as well.
So, Ron, give us a quick overview.
Yeah, real quickly. I mean, what we really identified, as you see on the screen there, the three topics. Transparency was something that was brought up quite often in multiple, but not only in the legislature, but also, as I mentioned before, in the test report. We also talked a little bit about problematic and hidden fees. Those are all the mandatory fees that are passed through to our residents that quite often they don't realize it, they don't see it, they're not communicated in it. In a proper manner, a proper way. And then the other thing that I think is really front and center is eviction litigation. I think it's a goal of ours, and it never is a goal that we want to evict people, but how can we improve that? How can we stop it? How can we do better in preventing some of our residents being thrown out on the street, maybe unnecessarily, or was there a way that we could have done better in helping them in getting into an issue or whatever that is. So those were the three basically main topics that we brought up. Under transparency, there's a couple of bullet points that we're looking at. I think front and foremost is the comprehensive public and financial benefits test. You've seen that now in our deals moving forward in our last three or four deals. Gerber and I were in Zoom. We were in Houston and we were watching the city of Houston present to us their financial benefits test. So we're working on what that model looks like. And I think it seems to be a really good tool that we're using. And what it's doing, what I'm learning from is we listen from our partners, is making our partners think. And it's making them think about the mission. It's making them think more about the affordable component that we offer, but also the benefits, which we haven't seen that. I mean, it's making them do a little bit more hard thinking in preparation and making sure that these companies, you know, want, you know, that exemption that is so
coming. I think we can see that even in the short time that we've been getting those reports, that there has been a definite movement in terms of trying to show the cost of analysis.
Yeah, they've been very responsive to that. And quite honestly, if partners don't want to do that, then they don't get very far past our desk. So we're not going to go that way. The second thing we talked about is disclosure of all fees prior to applications. And I think that's something that should be very, very front and center as well. Mm-hmm. You know, how we disclose that when an applicant walks in, it's posted in front of their face, right there at the desk, with the sheet that's handed to them before they sign anything. They understand exactly what they're coming in and looking at, and so there's no miscommunication and there's no misunderstanding once the lease is signed, and then they open up their portal and they see, you know, the same things on their list. So I think that's something that we're working very diligently on.
The fees. How many are one-time fees? You know, like if they were paid one time, and how many are monthly, and how many are annual? So are there all three?
So there's the initial fees when you do your application,
mm-hmm.
and those are fees that we are also trying to cap, application fees, and you know, to maybe about $100 per applicant. That's come significantly down. Mm-hmm. But that's a one-time fee. Mm-hmm. The mandatory fees are the monthly fees. We have worked really hard with our partners to minimize those and consolidate them to where we either we make them so there's one or two line items when they open up their portal, and it's the same amount every single month.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're working at capping those at no higher than $60 per month on mandatory fees, and that would include, you know, a trash, you know, trash pickup. There's some most of it's trash, but there's also some community fees and things like that. Consolidating those in playgrounds, dog park, you know, sort of like an amenity fee, but it kind of goes
user,
all in.
It's a user fee?
It's more than amenity.
It's a fee to help us keep those things up.
Okay.
And those are what the tenants use the most. But we're talking, that's a $5 fee. And again, I think most of our properties are well below $60.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that aren't are some of the older ones that we inherited, and we're working to get those down. And I will tell you, we're in discussions, especially with our partners at Belveron, to eliminate all the fees, make them part of the rent, and so that, you know, tenant opens up their rent, and they have one line item that's going to pay rent,
mm-hmm.
and there's going to be nothing there. And that's something we're going to try and probably roll out as a trial at a couple properties of ours in 2026,
mm-hmm.
and to see how that market. We think it could start a trend that other properties around us are going to go. I mean, I think tenants would be more appreciative of seeing, okay, I know my rent's $45 higher than the guy across the street,
mm-hmm.
but I also got to open my portal and find a list of 16 different things.
It could be a real marketing tool for
exactly.
The marketing.
So we're very excited.
Out of my ignorance, I mean, I've rented when I lived in San Francisco, but I've paid one fee.
Mm-hmm.
and I never even dreamt that there were monthly fees that I would be adding on to it. Well, we didn't, maybe I was on a Prop 13 and it was a different story, but nevertheless, I was not used to this concept of monthly fees in addition to the rental fees.
Well, we've seen this as a tool to just create additional revenue and really,
it's a tool that's used by almost every industry. If you think about the airline industry, you know, when the price starts flying, you know, you're paying for priority, and it was a way for them to generate additional revenue, and that's what the fee was. So, my question would be, once we do this, how are we going to compare to just market rate price?
So we have a compiled data list of 428 properties across the city with all their fees. So we were using that as a guide as to how we're doing that. We will be significantly lower than the market rent properties up there, especially the higher end ones. But everything fluctuates. You know, I would have said that. I think you remember that we presented to you the Everest when our friend Jared Sullivan came in. That's a brand new, absolutely class A, beautiful property, and our fees there are $49. Mm-hmm. And we're working on getting those even. Mm-hmm. So you're
so 50 bucks a month is significant in this.
Oh, yeah. Really. You don't know those fees are coming. Now we've got an awful lot to advertise them, to put them up on the website, put them up on the wall, so no one can say they didn't know that the fees were coming. Mm-hmm. But the idea of actually having no hidden fees, the rent you say, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really attractive.
Was that like Capital One?
Yeah.
And on the Everett, the maximum rent you can charge is inclusive of the fees. So even if they don't lower the fees, the affordable tenants won't have an increase.
And that's bullet point three, that not only are we capping the rents at their 30% of their adjusted median income, which a lot of people, you know, you see a lot of people putting people into full occupancy, but they're paying 50% of their income is going toward rent and putting them in a position to fail.
And you get higher than 50%.
And higher. And so, you know, we're working very hard. We're going to cap those rents at 30% of AMI, and that will include all these fees in that calculation. So you won't get max rent under the AMI of affordable AMIs and then add fees on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be built into those AMIs. That's a big significant change for us.
I do have a question for you. Is there any what I would call a variable rate fee that you could think of? By chance, it's like if you were in electric, that's a variable because each month it goes up because based on fuel costs. But in terms of specific fees, are there some that vary, that they have cost factors that make them vary from month to month?
I think the only variable fee that we might be would be the technology and packages that we do that we're looking at. It when there's a suggestion actually of Mr. Gerber's there, who has his daughter was doing it, is there packages that we could charge on internet that are less than, you know, somebody may not need a $60 package, they only want a $15. And so, you know, we're looking at options through our technology providers to do something like that. That's what the only thing I think of that we have.
Because some properties we have a locked in, you have to get a $70 package, $60 package. And the question was, could you get, and everyone has, that's the condition of living in the property. Now, I think most of the residents there see real savings and benefit from it. And there were reasons that choice was made. But going forward, with more competition in the technology sector, we're kind of wondering, can we get, you know, a $20 package, a $40 package, a $60 package, or no package? Someone doesn't want a package, they shouldn't be committed to that.
We're also looking at having those exclusive packages, but not making them mandatory. If the tenant wants them, then we'll do that. And then immediately the property gets a fee off of that, but it's not a mandatory fee to the tenant. So those are some of the things.
Where does extermination fall?
We're trying to limit that altogether. We feel that that's a charge that the property should handle. It's the responsibility of the owner. Except for a unit that is extremely, you know,
when there's an extra charge,
bed bugs, or hoarding, or anything like that. That we,
have a question. What about the pet fees?
So those are optional as well. With you know, if you have a pet, you're going to get a pet fee. We're looking at that overall as a what that's going to look like. Right now, we're focusing on mandatory fees, but we do charge a monthly pet fee of $20.
Initially,
there's a deposit. It's usually about $300 or $250 per pet.
Oh, there is no cap on that one.
Well,
it's not mandatory to every resident. It's your choice whether you
have a pet or not. How many you have, and
you have
what
a
it
lot
is.
Of damage mm-hmm. cat as a result.
And we're also looking at capping late fees on late rent, whether it's a one-time 5% charge that then doesn't go up every day or every week, which compounds the problem even more. So those are some of the things. Next slide is problematic and hidden fees. As we're talking about it now, we're trying to cap those fees at a max of 6 weeks. Transparency, we want that to be seen everywhere on our websites, on our marketing materials, on our advertising, on our flyers when residents walk in. That's something that we're going to have absolutely mandated. Prohibition of the non-refundable fees. So if you get we used to have this program, and I think you've heard about it, where a tenant walks in and they can't qualify credit-wise, but they pay an additional deposit and you give them a second chance and a second look. Those fees are some of the places used to be non-refundable. We're making all those either eliminated or we're totally refunding those fees so that's not an extra burden on the tenant. And again, there's a couple other things we're looking at, capping those application fees and the late fees that we'll put on the rent. So that's kind of the hidden problematic fees. And we'll get back to you more with more direction.
So,
on
the second chance fees, so we would propose a prohibition of charging a fee if giving a potential tenant a second chance.
And what that means is they would pay an additional deposit because to get them into a property where normally they can't get in anywhere because of some sort of a credit issue. But that deposit used to be totally non-refundable. Now we're making that if you pay your rent 11 months, you do that on time, you don't have any issues, then we automatically in the 11th month before you renew again on your 12th, we give you that fee 100% back. And so we're eliminating that revenue source, if you want to call it that.
Are there any other non-refundable fees?
Not unless there's damage waivers and damage fees.
Yeah,
an
application.
So the application fee is non-refundable.
That's correct.
That should be it.
That, yes.
Being the cancel check, then you write a hot check.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I thought so.
How do our managers accept rent? Are they still accepting checks? Do we do it electronically? Sort of. What goes on at the property level?
Pretty much everything's on dashboards, and they all pay through portals.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally you'll have a resident or two that does not have this capability at some of our sites, and we do take checks. Very, very few are trying to eliminate that. Obviously, no cash is accepted and things like that. But all our properties have portals to use the ability to them to pay. On the eviction mitigation, as we talked a little bit more, a big thing is we're working very hard to get the eviction protection call center that we're trying to develop, which I think will be a really cool asset and a needed asset for AAC properties. We're working with AMP on that. They actually are looking for a couple people to service that for us as well.
Yeah, so on that note, because I was I have a client, and they are all, I've never met anybody all in AI. They got hired by a utility company, and basically they had to have a call center, and they use AI, and they didn't have to worry about having individuals. If in fact they actually needed it, we did roll them over, but for the most part, because of the word prompt and everything, it would take them to a script, answer all the questions, and this was, because this firm deals with crisis communication, and I was just impressed. I'll be interested to see whether AI can help out with that in terms of reducing our costs, but still being just as efficient.
Probably worth looking into. I always thought the human element in this type of a situation with an addiction pending or some help, having a person always liking to listen to the other, who always often listen to children and hearing their hearings. And mm-hmm. compassionate she was and just that was concerned, but she was there and someone had a voice and a space that they can actually sit there and talk to. That was my idea of
our assumption is that the manager of the property and the resident has kind of split an impact. And either the resident is no longer communicating with the manager, but doesn't have a place to go, and so just hopefully there's a place for them to go. And as a manager, also maybe could an impact and may not have a place to go with any further resident and has other resources at the central office that they can have work with, reach out to the resident and try to help. I mean, the resident still has the responsibility, but the manager may not know as much as she hopefully will do very specialized folks to know about the repayment plan, funds that may be available through Open Americano or other rent recovery, rental help programs, and other resources that might be available. But I was clear. Ron and I both spoke the other day at the AMP luncheon, and we said, we want to see our eviction rate, which is right now standing at 5%, which is low compared to others in the space, still too high. But we'd like to see that half.
Let me just throw this out. So when I worked at PHU, we gave a ton of money to Catholic Charities of the United States. And our deal was a little bit different. We're in competitive market. We're competing with the Lions, Green, and all these others. Because at the time, there was like 75 retail providers that you could use. And so we gave a ton of money to those specific So when we had a customer who couldn't pay their bill and wouldn't have the conversation, we would direct it to them. And they said, okay, well, you're with PSU and they're about to cut your lights off because you're behind, how far are you behind, blah, blah, blah. We can give you this amount so you can keep your lights on. For us, it was a way of keeping that customer, as opposed to having a customer get cut off and then finding a way to come up with a deposit and go be with another electric company. We're not in that type of competitive market, but, we give, X amount of dollars away to different charities and stuff like that, it may be worth looking at in terms of helping reduce our addiction. If somebody could go to one of these charities, they could help them out, and or some other organization that we trust and feel comfortable with, that would be at least an option for a school. I'm not advocating for it. I'm just giving an example that we use in that space. I'll tell you how it pays dividends. There was a piece of legislation that was going to just kick our butt, and Catholic Charities came up and testified against this piece of legislation. They had nothing to do with them, but it was going to hurt us. And 9 people in the committee. We didn't know a 700 Catholic. They walked up and told the chairman, "I'm not voting against the Catholic Church." And after the hearing, the chairman came up to me and said, "Are you going to have the Pope come?"
Maybe.
Am I in that day? He said, "No." He said, "You go away. This is done." He said, "I didn't realize it, but I got 7 members of my committee who are Catholic, and they're not voting against the Catholic Church."
Well, all 3 of my sisters went to high school with Pope.
Did they really?
Well, they were in the all girls school.
and when he was in this all-boys school,
and
they always had the dances were all integrated.
Oh,
wow. They were the Seton.
There are stories.
Pretty interesting.
But that's just, you know, that's food for thought. Not something, you know, again, we're
great,
not in a competitive space like that, but in terms of, well, then they help reduce the eviction rate, you know, maybe a little, maybe once, and maybe it makes sense, you know, in other, that, you know. But anyway, it's just something to think about.
Fantastic. And again, we're working at the 30-day notice for everybody before we even file. We give them Sunday rights this year before even then. Send that out. Looking at flexible payment plans. We want to make sure that our residents, that our properties are treating our tenants fairly and are open and understand that payment plans and flexible plans are acceptable, and we'll work with them on that. That notice. Last thing on the call center. Some of our residents have bad days.
What does the apartment association say the eviction rate is in the greater Austin area? I would think they have the best data.
They probably do. I don't know that. I don't have that number.
I'd be really interested in how.
It's interesting to see if the past 3 to 4 months have had any effect on that.
Well, let's move on to this last item that we need to pick up, because we'll put a pin in that conversation, and later we're going to be coming back to that in the month ahead.
Thank you for the good thinking that we're into that.
Well, you all helped us for that, too, at our meeting. We had a lengthy conversation about this, so it's important to have just what we know.
The session we had out at our new property at
All right.
No action is required on this item number 2.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be seeing you all coming back, right?
Yes, ma'am.
With something that requires action on our part, right?
Yeah, maybe a couple of months. And Ron's expanding his team just a little bit. We're going to have a couple of Katie Richardson, who's sitting right back there, who's been helping from the LDJ school and brings an incredible data background. He's going to move into Ron's shop in the new year, and he's going to be working part time there while she finishes her degree. Well, she's a policy fellow because she's a graduate student all the way through. But she is working really hard with Ron's gas, and she's working with Ken, and she's doing a lot of different parts of the shop. But we think right now with the upcoming legislative action on the horizon, it's really useful to get that move from there.
Okay, so that's it for item number 2. We will move on now to item number 3, and this is resolution 00285, and it relates to action for the bridge at River Park. Ron?
Thank you, Madam Chair. 5%.
5%, yes. Okay. Oh, thank you.
Thank you, everybody. I'm happy to share this property with you. It's been something that we've been working on for quite a while. You always hear me say that, but these things don't just happen overnight. This is a property called Cortland River Place Apartments. Cortland is a big company. And they have an 8 property portfolio across the country, and that they were divesting of, and we worked really hard to have them pull this one off out of the portfolio for up here directly for us to buy, separate from from the rest of the portfolio. This is located on, as you can see on the site plan, it's on 2222, right at the almost to the entrance of River Place Boulevard, a little bit to the east there. This is almost directly across the street from the Riverland Ranch, which I think many of you have toured and seen, which we're really excited about. It's also just around the corner. If you go 2220 to 620, you're back at China Ranch. So we've got a very good handle on what's going on in that market and what's going on in that neighborhood. And this is a very, very good opportunity for us. It's extremely high-end property.
It's one of the largest, isn't it?
It's a very big, it's 498 units, one of our largest ones. It was built in 1999. It's gone through extensive renovations inside and outside, and it's just absolutely immaculate. We've walked it multiple times. We're super excited about it. You've got 276 one-bedroom, one-bath, and 222 two-bedroom, two-bath. There are no three bedrooms there, but the two bedrooms are very large. And surprisingly enough, we have a number of families with kids there. We're still not sure how many, but we see them in the offices afterwards. They have some kids programming that they've already initiated prior to us being there. Mm-hmm. Because the schools across the street, obviously, are Vandegrift, and the middle school there is just one of the highest rated schools, and it's very, very in high demand. And that's what's been very successful for us at Riverland Ranch. I can tell you that it's Four Points and River Price Elementary, Four Points Middle School, and Vandegrift High School. That keeps the ability for us to keep that place leased. It's very, very sought after property in a great location. The purchase price here is $94 million. Again, it's we're in a Fannie Mae loan. We think we're going to be much better than the 520s. We haven't locked yet. That we're assuming that we've seen some droppage not only in the rate but also in the spreads that the Fannie and Freddie charge. So we think we're going to get a very, very formidable rate on that. I did want to share with you that we're of the 498 units we've been able to verify. By income and by household, 325 of those 498 to date. 51 households are, or 16% of the proper of those units are at 30% of AMI or below. 55 are at 40% or below. That's 11%. 50% AMIs are 62 households. That's 19%. At 8%, there's 38 households at 60% AMI. And then at 44 more households at 80% AMI, which is another 14%. Very large. We have 75 households above $109,000 a year, which encompasses 28% of those. So we're well above the required, obviously the required minimums for affordability, but we're seeing some incredibly low, which is very surprising to us.
Yeah, well, I'm shocked.
In that area. What's that? Well, their rents are equal to their AMI. So they're not paying 50% of their income. So those are verified by income by household. So it's very surprising.
So the 10% is out the window. You're saying it's close to 50% that are really below 60%.
Yes, not. That's correct. And it's not surprising in terms of what the city is going through right now.
Well, and also the age of property. I'm assuming a lot of people have been here for many years.
There has been very, very long tenant histories there. But I will say, for the age of the property, you would not know it. I'm super excited to have a meeting out there. I think you'd really enjoy it. So it sits on 40 acres. It's absolutely beautiful property in terms of just the landscape and the things and the amenities around it.
Built in 1999, this has to be one of the first multi-family properties in River Point.
And built in that area, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was basically a ghost town out there back in the,
I can see, I bought a house. Mm-hmm. If you go down 620 going back east, and then you go back off of Anderson Mill, and we were looking after one reason why we didn't buy a little place is because, or building a little place, is because there was not an HDB, there was nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
They were putting up homes and everything, and we had some experience to live there, but it was nothing. To get that look, so you have to drive it.
Mm-hmm.
I was out there in 1994 when I was out there, and I remember there not being anything there.
Well, we really, as long as we see Riverland Ranch, which is almost directly across the street from River Place, we feel the synergy between those will help us, talk about, you know, managing rents, we'll be able to do that in a very, very significant way. With two different partners, by the way.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that the rents are as low as they are. I mean, But because those homes in River Place, you know, they started out, you know, as high as 300 back in 99. And my friend who bought one when they moved 4 years ago to Atlanta, I think they sold their home for $1.7 million. So, I mean, all those properties would appreciate it. And so that's why I was surprised that the apartment complex, you know, I was just wondering when they built that, was that for people who worked at the construction, the 3M, which was campus out there, and I know they moved and sold it. And,
well, and that's the other promising thing. At some point in the near future, that campus will be rented. It's 1 million square feet of office space that's poised right next to the river.
It's being renovated. Man.
It's finished. And they're holding out for a minimum of 50,000 square foot tenant. They're not leasing to anyone else less than that. And they're getting some pretty good responses now, in the last year. But that's going to really change the dynamic of both of the Riverland and this place as well in terms of location for renting. You see it's right down by the Oasis, the location. It's a fantastic area. I do want to tell you that I'm running out of pipeline, so this is one of the last deals that you'll see from us for a while. We have nothing coming. We've been working on this for about 6 months to get this out. I just want to give you some heads up that you'll see maybe one more that Suzanne I've been working on for multiple months as well in January, and I'm just going to be focusing more on our stuff here at home and getting stuff together.
You've been saying how you wanted to get something close to Hippie Hollow. So
We were missing you and Suzanne.
We're going to be working on some other things.
We'll have some fun.
We're
going to be doing it. But we're going to take a look internally.
Yes.
Make sure we have policies and procedures that are really reflective of an organization that's got, $3+ billion in real estate. We've got a lot of people that are counting on us to get it right, and that includes, the legislature. And so as Vaughn said, we went to Houston and met with folks there to hear about their model.
Mm-hmm.
But then the new president of the Houston House has already came here to visit with us. And it was really nice to visit with him, Jamie Bryant. There's been some abuse in the industry. Not here, but there's been some abuse in the industry. And and now is when all the PHAs that are responsible have to step up and really make sure that we're making our best case. So that's what we're going to do. And we've got lawyers who are helping, and investors, and others. There's a lot. We are not housing finance corporations. We are not the PFC. And we do a lot of good, and we know the community. And now we need to do something that Dr. Duncan, you've been talking about for years. We really need to tell the story. And so we're gonna do some of that. It doesn't mean that we're gonna slow down a little bit, but it doesn't mean we're stopping by any stretch. We're gearing up for the next big run.
We're looking for the right thing. In 30 seconds, I did want to tell you that if you go back to first quarter of 2022, second quarter of 2022, I was sharing with Sarah, we had 47,000 apartment units available on the market. In third quarter 2025, we're down to under 17,000. We're absorbing probably 12,000 to 16,000 units a year. So while we think 26 will still be pretty steady, you're starting to see bumps in the infill areas, the downtown area, the domain area, starting to see rent increases and concessions burn off. We still have a lot of suburban properties that have about another year. I think 26 is going to be the turning cycle. We're already seeing it. There's only 648 new units coming on the market. So there's no supply in that's planned in the future. So I think 2027 to 2030, the need for affordable housing is going to be absolutely astronomical. It's that cycle again. So, and that's real data. That's not made up stuff. Those verified numbers.
It's not 400 and 500.
It's going to be anyway, I hope you all will approve this deal. We really think it's a great one for us.
Thank you, Ron.
Well,
thank you,
Suzanne.
Also. So, do I hear a motion to approve resolution 20285? Okay. Carl made the motion. Mary made the second. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Congratulations to Ron and Suzanne for a very productive year.
I wanted to, if y'all don't mind, I just updated. You know, I mentioned that we were working with Patricia Murphy's new nonprofit for resident services on some of our properties. She works on a lot of Megan Lash's properties, who we're partners with on a couple of our properties. And we all got together and sponsored families from these properties and got a bunch of, like, our general contractors guy that has built some of our properties, sponsored like 30 families. AMP sponsored some. We sponsored some. Horizon Bank did. We sponsored 100 families, and we delivered the toys and everything on Tuesday afternoon.
Sponsored the families. What did we do?
They filled out a sheet on, you know, how many kids they had, what gifts that they would like, because they wouldn't have had gifts for Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and so we were able to just go and fill those wishes. We've got some. I'm gonna send them to Ken.
Yeah, send them to Ken.
Yeah. So.
Thank you for that. It's very good.
The commissioners, there's no need for an executive session, and so I think it's done.
May I close it?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. To adjourn from the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Board meeting.
At 2:16, Mary Carl made the motion. Mary seconds. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is adjourned at 2:16.
So then we turn to item number 5, which is to approve the same similar item, resolution number 2930 by the Board of Commissioners, to take the following actions regarding as it relates to the grid that will replace in Austin.
I move to second.
There's a motion made and there's a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Before we adjourn, I want to recognize everybody in the room, the staff, and the staff that's not in here. Just want to just say kudos to everyone for a great year. I got a email from a woman named Irene Tucker, who I met at a NARO conference. She is the CFO for the Detroit Housing Commission. And she reached out to me. She said, you know, I heard you give a presentation. You talked about how great you guys are. We're trying to turn ourselves around. We think we're in a good position. I really want to come to Austin, bring my team, to meet with you all. And then so she sent me the email. I saw it. I took a couple of days. Not even a day. The next day I got a text message from her, and then I got a voicemail hour after the text message. I better follow with this woman, and so I did, and so I just said, you need to meet with our staff, and so I sent Mike a note, and I responded to her, copied Mike, sent her over to Mike, and I just said, you know, you don't need to talk to this woman. Mike said, we talk to everybody, you don't need to come. So anyway, they talked to Mike, and so I knew they had set it up. She sent me a note thanking me, and she said, but we really want to talk to you. And I was like, you talk to the staff. No, we got to talk to you. So they're lawyers, her CEO, she, and a couple other folks, and they were just so excited to have the opportunity to talk to our staff and all the great things, because they're going through a RAD conversion. And so, they were like little kids on Christmas morning. They were so happy. And it's my understanding they're planning on coming to Austin to meet with Mike and the team and everything. And I said, Mike told me that he can do all this over the phone. Right? No, we have to come here. We want to come and be here. So all that is to say that, you know, we are the authority in the industry. We're doing great things, and we're doing great things because of the talent we have.
Okay.
You're so excited.
Yes,
but, Mike, I would just express to, you know, the entire staff how grateful I am for all they do, and, you know, having someone call and say, look, we want to come and spend time with you all. You know, folks from Houston, folks from Detroit, you know, we've all heard stories about Detroit, but for them to look to us is, we really need to come and sit at your feet and learn, and we want to learn from the best. I don't think there's a higher tribute that anybody can
mm-hmm.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Tyra, you should be here since they are from Michigan and you're from Michigan.
Yeah, I know. And you said Detroit. I thought,
We think part of they're definitely looking to come in the wintertime. And they're fun to talk about, the folks from Detroit. It's fun to chat with them.
When do they want to come?
I'm sure in the wintertime.
Oh, I'm sure they do, too, yeah.
It's always fun to talk to folks. We have Fort Worth here. And interestingly, some of us are going to make a trip early in the spring, you know, in the first quarter of the year, up to Fort Worth, so I think there's some things for us to learn there as well, and maybe even we've been at El Paso, we've been at San Antonio at different points. So, we all learn from each other, right? And no one's got the code cracked, and in RAD implementation is about as hard as it gets. So, yes, they're opening up a Christmas package. I don't know what I would say is maybe in that package for them, but it was hard, and we tried to give them a real taste of the struggles that we just tried to shoot off those people. Everybody has their own experience, but I thank you for that. It meant a lot. It meant a lot that you would put your legal talents and you know, your institutional know-how to help make that board feel confident. Hearing from you all
mm-hmm.
as board members has made their board and other boards that we've worked with feel confident, because they say, okay, we can do the policy oversight necessary to get this done. So I appreciate it. I would say this is kind of an historic meeting before you wrap up. This is the last time you will adjourn the Housing Authority of the City of Austin.
We'll be
in Austin. And I thank you all for your improvements to the logo. We're really excited by the logo and the color palette. And so you will start seeing that roll out probably second quarter, so April on. But it'll slowly but surely start rolling out. But we will be Austin Housing Authority on January 1. And I thank you all for your vote of confidence.
Than these folks around the country hear what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
and so they want to come see. They want to share. They want some of the Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
So while yes, the staff does all the work,
mm-hmm.
I mean you and Carl have really been so present over
and
the last 7 years that you've given us that recognition. I think,
mm-hmm.
that other housing authorities around the country are recognizing.
Well, I will say this, again, the reason why I'm going to give kudos to the staff. When I got appointed to the board in 1997, I got appointed on a Wednesday night. I showed up to my first board meeting the next morning. And then Richard Moya, who was there, said afterwards, "Hey, Rich, you going to this conference?" And I said, "What conference?" "Oh, man, that's the conference coming on next month in New York," and so I was able to sign me up all that stuff and learn. And for at least the next 3 narrow conferences I went to, it was pretty tough, because we were the bunch of very bad jokes. And now we were the butts of every bad joke they told, because we were that bad.
That bad.
That bad.
Okay.
And so now to have folks want to come and learn from us, this is you all. The thing is, this is you all, because you all are here every day. And so, again, that's what I say. Thank you.
I agree with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Carl, how do you so what I didn't tell you all that happened, and we got a bunch of people who are waiting for us on therapy with you there. Different folks are getting involved in National Association Group. And Laura to step up and get involved a little bit more in some National Association work and her leadership role with our medical system. Ron is doing an awful lot of stuff, with Seth Jarre now with the legislative site. We've got Michael Cummings stepping up. Barbara is a gift and a blessing to you. Be amazed how few housing authorities have what we have in such an extraordinary CFO. To a person, Suzanne, we've got Shelley as a leader in compliance. We've got folks who are really involved, and we used to be with Shelley. But I do want to point one thing out. When we were at Claflin, the last board meeting, at the last meeting of Claflin, not the last board meeting, but the Jewish fall conference, they have a period at the very beginning called Ripples of Hope. And where people get to stand up and they get to say something that's going on. And Sylvia has been acting in Claflin for a long time. And she stood up and she shared that the rent, that HUD has finally been persuaded to make adjustments to the rent for those who are RAD first adopters. This has been a huge fight. And Sylvia is championing that issue nationally. And Jeff Patterson, who's the president of Claflin, stopped and highlighted Sylvia's leadership there, that's made it possible for other agencies, not just ours, but really, a whole network of agencies to really look to Sylvia and to, keep the group together to help make that fight. Yeah, we made that fight, there's a lot of people here to know the numbers and everything, but, as I said, hats off to you. I didn't really say thanks enough then, but there were about 200 more of us in that room. Also, let's have some cookies, and I think everyone in the room, although we're being a little quiet about it, we're having let's come over to Juliet after 3:30 on that outside granite. Have a cup of Christmas beer, and then after six, cookies out here with some of the staff. There's staff that are here in the building. And we're going to see the artwork that some of the artists are here. You can see the artists in there. Yep. Motion to adjourn by Commissioner Sherrington, seconded by Apostolo.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. We adjourn at 2:67 on December 18th.